This is the Motley Fool Radio Show, and now it's time to go to the Fool Phones. I'm joined once again by Motley Fool personal finance expert, Dayana Yoakum. Dayana, welcome.
Hi, David.
The phone lines are open for your financial questions and comments.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL, and we're going to Pittsford, New York. Tara is on the line. Hi, Tara.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Got a money question for us, I take it?
Yes. Sold my home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm job relocating. And we gained about $65,000 on the sale.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And we are wondering how much of that we should invest percentage-wise, how much should we put in a savings account. We're going to go from two income to one in order to start a family.
Mm, okay.
And so we're just trying to get some advice on what we should do with this money.
Okay. Got a windfall. You want to know how much of it to invest and how much to put into savings.
Correct.
I'll give you the quick and dirty answer. Invest as much of it as you can and put in savings only what you need. How's that?
Okay.
Now let's go into a little depth. You have to ask yourself a couple questions. Do you have short-term needs right now? Do you have debt? You say you're relocating, so you're probably going to have moving expenses.
Minimal. Fortunately for me, I work in the college setting, and I'm going from one college to another.
Where are you moving to?
Canton, New York. Hmm. So my cost of living is going to plummet as well.
Okay.
Fabulous.
And I don't need to invest in a new home as they're providing transitional housing for a few years at a nominal rent structure. So that brings my cost of living down as well.
Great.
And can walk to work. So that's one less car and gas to worry about. So, you know, short term, yes, there will be a little bit of moving expense, although they will reimburse me up to $2,500 for that. And maybe some things to put some finishing touches on the actual new house, even though we don't have to buy the house.
Right.
And then some unexpected expenses, obviously, we'll plan for. We do have pets, and starting a family is not cheap.
Mm-hmm. Tara, let me ask, sounds like a great deal there. Are they giving you meals, too?
No.
Starbucks coupons?
No. And even if they did, that would be taxable, so I'm glad they're not.
But it sounds like a pretty full package overall. That's a legitimate question, the meal plan question,
yes.
Dayana. Nice.
Are they hiring?
They might be.
Well, you mentioned that you're going from two incomes to one.
Yes.
Your cost of living is going to decrease substantially, so that might not be as big of a squeeze as it would be for a lot of people.
Right.
So basically, you need to reconfigure the budget.
Exactly.
And the traditional rules apply here. Pay down high interest debt. That's double-digit interest rates, mostly credit card debt, or even car loans, if your car loan is anywhere above, say, 7-9% range. Secondly, having short-term savings and emergency stash of cash. 3 to 6 months of living expenses is a good place to start, if you can do that. And then start thinking about the medium term, which is starting the family, buying your next home. That should go in something that's not as accessible, but will give you a little bit of interest at least. So certificates of deposit, money market account.
Okay.
And then finally, the biggest portion should be going to your long-term savings. That's your retirement account. So hopefully something that's provided through the school, so you've got some sort of...
Yeah, we have TIA Crest that I'm already contributing to, as well as a Fidelity account.
Fabulous.
Tara, congratulations. It sounds like you're in a good place right now.
I think so. I hope so.
And I'm assuming you're psyched about the new job. That's why you're doing it.
Yes, yes. Right. I'm very excited about the new job and you know, all the changes that are ahead of us. And the fortunate thing is we don't have any high interest debt. We don't have any credit card debt. We got rid of all of that. And my car loan will be paid off in a year, and it's like at 5%.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great.
That's extraordinary. That is, you are well above average right now, so pat yourself on the back for that.
I will. Thank you.
Standing ovation to Tara.
All right, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate all this advice.
Well, thanks for calling, Tara.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL, and we're going to Van Wert, Ohio. Anthony is on the line. Hi, Anthony.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well today, thank you.
Good. Sounds like you're on a cell phone.
Yes, I am. I'm sitting still, so I won't lose signal.
Oh, you're sitting still, so you're in a vehicle that theoretically moves.
Yes. Yes, I drive truck for a living.
Oh, you do?
Have you ever, let's make it just the last 5 years, have you had cargo that no one was able to tell you what you were carrying?
Well, that's kind of a tough question. No, I know what I'm carrying, but many times I pick up a sealed trailer, so I have it on faith that it is what they say it is.
Aha. Uh-huh. Understood completely. Thank you for calling the show. And Anthony, what's your question today?
All right. I'm 50 years old. I've been driving now for 3 years for this company. They have a 401k. They match 20% of what I put in up to 15% of my pay. I currently put in 12%. I have 10% in a global fund, 10% in large caps, 80% in small caps. And then I heard the show the other day, and I thought, well, I really don't know what the difference is between a large cap and a small cap fund.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is my question. What is the difference? And then is the allocation okay there, considering where I'm at, what I need to do?
Okay, well, the large cap, small cap question, you know, you're not the only one who doesn't know the difference. And in fact, the industry doesn't really clearly define the difference between those two. But David, I know that you have your own definitions.
Well, yes, as an investor over the years, and in fact, in one or two of our books, we've striven to put numbers on it. The funny thing is, you can write a book 5 years ago, and then the market moves up, and all of a sudden, what used to be a small cap now looks like a large cap, even though it might still be a small cap. So let me explain. Anthony, I think every company, well, first of all, we know every company has a price tag. And what I try to do is divide the world up into four groups based on size. You ready?
Okay.
We've got large, medium, small, and micro. And the way that I define it, feel free to use this yourself and talk it up to your friends, and then we can finally achieve a standard, is to say that micro is below $100 million. So any company whose stock is worth less than $100 million is a micro cap. Now let's step it up to small cap. I would say between $100 million and $1 billion, you have your small cap.
Okay.
Next, medium, mid-cap stocks, I would call from $1 billion to $5 billion. And then I would say large cap is anything greater than $5 billion. So when somebody says you have a small cap fund, let's be clear, that does not say anything about the actual size of the fund, like how much money the manager's managing. That does, all it means is what he's buying for his fund.
The companies that are in that fund.
That's right. So the small cap fund will be companies that are, you know, around $1 billion or less usually in value. So now we get to your real question, which is about your allocation. You've got 80% of your money invested in small cap and then 10% in mid and 10% in large or something like that?
10% was in like a global.
Okay, international is 10%
yeah.
And then 10% in large cap. So I mean, my feeling about that is you're 50 years old, as you mentioned, Anthony, and I think you're probably a little overweighted right now in small cap. There's something to like about that, which is that small cap typically will outperform over long periods of time, right? Because those are the companies that are small that grow larger over time. Some of them fail altogether, of course, and that's where the extra risk comes in. But over time, those companies tend to outperform. You're 50 years old. You've got 2+ decades, maybe, before you tap this money. So, you know, I like it from that standpoint. However, you are taking on extra risk. You are now just past 50 years old. And usually, you want to ratchet that down a little bit and make the game a little bit surer so that you know the money's there for when you do want to retire.
Yeah, I'm probably putting in $500 a month at this point.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes a difference in the allocations.
It doesn't. You know what?
I don't need it all. I just need to be comfortable when I retire to be able to sit on the front porch with my wife in the rockers and watch the world go by.
I love it. You know, I'm with you. And my thinking is that you should probably, regardless of whether it's $500 a month or $500 a year, and by the way, good job saving $6,000 or so a year. But my feeling is that you should probably be something more like 50% small cap rather than 80% small cap, right? Because right now, just think of small cap as the riskier and over time the higher performing, but with extra risk and in a bad market environment, like let's say the stock market ain't so hot over the next 10 years, you'll be behind the game.
Uh-huh.
So if you ratchet down your risk a little bit and move some of that $500 monthly dollars a little bit more into large and international, I think you're probably just rounding things out a bit and making it more likely that rocker's there for you.
So take the difference and split it between the other two?
Yeah, I could see that. I'd say 50 small, 25 large, 25 international. That's probably, I mean, there's no magic formula or one size fits all here. But,
right.
But you know, and you might even want to tweak that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when you're 60 years old, you probably want to tweak that down a little bit more into large and less into small then. But for where you are right now, I think I'd probably take that step with my new savings.
Well, great, Anthony. Thank you very much for your call.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
Take care. Drive safely.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL. Give us a call with your financial question or comment. Is there anything that's been perplexing you financially lately? Give us a call. Let's go to Karen in Oberlin, Ohio. Karen, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
Karen, do you have anything to do with Oberlin College?
Yes, I do. I teach there.
Outstanding. What do you teach?
I teach writing.
You know, it's funny because I, in fact, was a creative writing major and once applied to Oberlin College. And as it turned out, another school was willing to give me money, so I went to that school instead. But Oberlin is a wonderful place to go to college.
You.
Have you taught there for a long time?
Oh, just 8 years or so.
Mm-hmm. You know, some people would accuse me of continuing to do creative writing in my stock recommendations. What's your question, Karen?
Well, I need to buy a car, which I wasn't expecting to have to do. And so I don't know where to get the money. I mean, I suppose, you know, I have it, but it's just a little hard to figure out, you know, which fund to go to or what to do, where to get it from.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And also how much of a down payment to put on it.
Yep, it's the surprise emergency expense and a biggie, a car. Hate it when that happens.
Oh, I know.
Where is the money now?
I have about $18,000 in savings.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put a lot of money into a supplemental retirement account. I guess it's an annuity because I started saving for retirement late. And so I could lessen that amount that gets deducted from my paycheck. I put $863 a month into that now.
Okay, into the supplemental retirement annuity.
Right.
Okay. Well, why do you need a new car, by the way?
Well, the other one is about to need a new engine. It's a Subaru, and I thought I'd get 200,000 miles out of it, but I guess it needs a new engine after all.
What sound is it making right now, Karen? Oh, no, that's another public radio show. I'm sorry.
That's a different show.
That's right. Bite my tongue.
And I also have some investments, and I have a little pie chart of where that money is.
Okay. So you know where your money is at, and you just want to know, where exactly should the money to pay for the new car come from?
Right.
Now, we usually advise against borrowing from any retirement accounts for a purchase like a car.
And why would that be, Dan? I think I know the answer, but spell it out.
The classic depreciating asset, something that loses value over time, doesn't offer you any tax incentives as far as ownership goes. And also, why borrow from your future to pay for your present?
And something that will lose value over time.
That's right.
Understood.
Right. That's right.
And yet, we all sometimes need a car.
That's right. But Karen, you said you have $18,000 in savings right now.
Right.
And that's a nice cash cushion. And unless that money is earmarked for something else, I believe now you have the emergency and it's time to access the emergency fund.
Okay.
And you could pay cash, you could pay for the car outright instead of financing, depending on what kind of car that you get.
Used is good, right?
Used is always good. Have you thought about what you're going to buy?
I have, and I'm one of those tree huggers, as one of the dealers put it, who would really prefer at this point to go with a hybrid. So,
I like it. So you were actually called a tree hugger by one of the dealers.
I was. She said, oh, you wouldn't be interested in that model. That's just, you know, for those tree hugger types. And I said, well, actually, that would be me.
I love it. And then you ran outside and kissed the bark out on the tree.
I did, yes.
Okay. Well, give her a hybrid car. You know, I think there are some tax incentives now for those who buy hybrid cars.
Mm-hmm. And they're awfully popular. You have to wait in line in many cases, don't you?
You do.
Or were they out on the lot there that day, Karen?
Oh, no. They just have one or two a month, and you sign up on a list, and you don't get to dicker about the price at all.
That's right.
Speaking of creative writing, there's probably a good murder mystery to be written around the idea that, you know, people keep getting bumped off of this list, you know?
And right. That's a good one.
I think there's something there. You heard it here first.
You have talent.
You know, if you end up writing this, I want royalties.
Okay.
All right, Karen, so what do you think? Accessing the 18 grand, doable?
Yeah, I can do it.
Okay.
Right?
I know it's painful to watch that amount go away almost in one fell swoop, but remember, you were able to save it before, and should cash flow become an issue, you can cut back on your retirement savings over the short term. Wouldn't want you to get used to not saving for retirement, but you could cut back on the amount you're putting away every month to just ease up some money to build up that short-term savings once again.
Okay. Any suggestion about how much of a down payment to make? Is it better to make as big a down payment as you can? And
depends on the financing rates. If you can get a really sweet financing deal, 3%, 4%, 0% for a certain period of time.
No money down.
No money down. It might make sense to finance it, but I am really a fan of paying cash and just getting it over with. It's like ripping off the Band-Aid.
Okay.
You know, it's, you're going to end up paying for it one way or the other, and you might as well not pay interest on that if at all possible.
I see. Okay.
Now, Karen, I was a journalism major, and you know, I'm very familiar with the editor's red pen. I have to ask you this question. Most overused adjective among creative writing students. What is it?
Little. Or
good.
Perfect. It's a tie.
That's very interesting.
I wouldn't have guessed.
I'm actually very interested that quickly came to mind for you, Karen. I guess you find yourself slashing through those words a lot over the years.
Oh, well, you know, I'm a gentle sort. I use pencil, no red pen.
That's good. So is perfect the enemy of good?
Well, no, but it's kind of abstract and kind of optimistic.
It is. It's a little bit too ideal.
Right.
Karen, thank you very much for calling the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Oh, thank you for your help.
Good luck with your finances.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the Fool Phones for this week.
Thank you once again, Diana.
Thanks, David.
The Fool Phone lines are always open for your financial questions and comments. Give us a call during the week, 866-NPR-FOOL.